From the University of Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. For months now, the world has watched as more than a million refugees and migrants from countries like Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan have risked their lives to try and find safe haven in Europe. But this influx has created enormous tensions in the European Union about how many newcomers to accept and which countries should take them. Governments in Sweden and Germany have each taken in hundreds of thousands of refugees and migrants, and taking criticism both from other European states and their own people. Meanwhile, recent terror attacks in France and a spate of sexual assaults on women in Germany have stoked support for anti-immigrant and far-right political parties. So who foots the bill for settling the hundreds of thousands of immigrants? And if no one, where will these people go? Today on Global Journalist, a look at the ongoing immigration crisis and the debate over what to do with the thousands coming to Europe each day. We've got a busy show. Let's start with Matthew Castle from Seattle, Washington. He's a multimedia journalist and filmmaker. He's gotten up close with some of these people, traveling with them in Turkey, Hungary, and Macedonia, telling their stories for Al Jazeera, Vice News, and other news outlets. Matthew, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us just a little bit about what you saw when you were traveling through Southeastern Europe during this past year.
I started making the trip with a Syrian family in March, April, and June of last year. And I've gone back a number of times since to, I live in Istanbul, but I've been to Greece and Macedonia, the Balkans. And the route to Europe, what's known as the Balkans route, has changed a lot in that time. At first, when I first did the trip, I was accompanying refugees on back roads and on train tracks, and they had to avoid any kind of police or cities as they crossed borders illegally in the Balkans to reach Western Europe. Now that's changed. Since that time, it's become a bit more official in the sense that once refugees arrive to the Greek islands from Turkey, they can then continue to the Balkans countries like Macedonia, Serbia. And until recently, they were allowed to enter and pass through. But now it seems, in recent days at least, the former Yugoslavian countries in the Balkans are making it a bit more difficult. So Macedonia has, for example, closed, not completely, but to most people trying to enter from Greece, closed its border. So we're going to see a lot of people who are going to be stuck in Greece and other countries, and the situation is going to become much more difficult.
And I did see recently that Croatia had deployed its army to its border with Serbia in an effort to head off refugees there. And there were some quite tense moments in Central Europe at some of these borders in the past few months. Can you tell us about what you witnessed?
So the main route had been from Greece to Macedonia, Serbia, and then on to Hungary. And I was in Hungary, and I was at the Hungarian-Serbian border, and I can't remember which month now. Sorry, I've been going so many times. I think it was October, November. Anyway, when Hungary finally shut its border to with Serbia to refugees, and that just created an immense backlog of thousands of people, mostly families, young people, kids, infants, who were stuck at this border with literally nowhere to go. So it's created a humanitarian disaster. That one was resolved when, you know, the sheer number of refugees and migrants pushed on to a different country like Croatia and a new to Europe. But you're still having, I mean, just to main point here, the problems in the Middle East, in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and elsewhere around the Middle East and Africa are continuing, and you're going to see, now it's been winter time, so the seas have been more difficult, so less people have been trying to go from Turkey to Greece, but I think as soon as the seas start getting a little smoother, the weather starts getting better, we're going to see another increase in the numbers of people who are trying to reach a better and safe life for themselves.
And tell us, if you would, just about one family or one individual that you met and spoke with while you were doing this.
There's really so many people I've met. I'm making a film. I'm in the final stages of editing of a film I've been working on for the past year about one particular individual named Aboud. And he is just a typical, a normal Syrian, let's say, in the sense that he just wants to find work and be in a place where he can work and live safely with his family. He tried to do that in Turkey. He spent a few years in Turkey looking for work, was unable, like many Syrians, was unable to find work that could sustain himself and his family. So he couldn't go back to Syria because of the war and because he was wanted by the government. So the only option he had was to go to a country or a place where he could, you know, live, work, and bring his family. So that's why he made the trip to go to Europe last year. And thankfully, his family was able to join him, and he was able to take his wife and his two children out of Syria. And they all live in the Netherlands now.
And what do you think the biggest misconception that people may have about these refugees, migrants?
I think the biggest misconception is that they you know, any of us could easily be any of these people on the trail. And I've heard all kinds of things like, you know, they're just coming to take our money from Europeans and from Americans, and they're all terrorists. And it's just complete and utter nonsense. The majority of the people, and I've met literally thousands and thousands of people on this trail for the past year, the majority of people are looking for a safe place to live, and they want to work. And that's why they're going to Europe. They can't do that in Syria because of the war. If you want to stay in Syria, you're going to fight, you're going to be killed, you're going to get caught up in the war. If you want to stay in any of the neighboring countries, Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey, and other countries, it's going to be very difficult for you. So you only have a few options, and one of them is to go to a place like Europe or try for the United States or Canada, where you can seek asylum and work and live, you know, a dignified life like any of us.
And with just a few moments left, there is this effort in Europe now to try to prioritize refugees, people fleeing conflict, rather than economic migrants, people just sort of looking for a better job or better standard of living. How easy is it for the border patrol to tell the difference?
Well, that's very difficult, and it speaks to the lack of a coherent policy in Europe. It's not, it shouldn't be Greece and Macedonian authorities, their job to assess who is a migrant or who is a refugee. That job comes later when someone arrives to X country and applies for political asylum. It is the job of the authorities in that country to assess their claim and to decide whether or not that person is entitled to asylum. So now we've seen the Macedonian authorities have started blocking, for example, entrance to Iranians or to other people from sub-Saharan Africa, just because they're from Iran or sub-Saharan Africa. But those people, for example, it could be someone who's fleeing religious, cultural, political persecution in Iran, who would be entitled to refugee status in Germany, let's say, if they were able to reach that country. Anyway, Europe needs a coherent policy to deal with these refugees, and it doesn't have one in place at the moment.
Matthew Castle, thanks so much for joining us. I want to remind our listeners you're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, the refugee crisis in Europe and the debate over what to do with the thousands of people looking for safety and a better life. Joining us now from Buckingham, England, Anthony Glees, Director for the Center for Security and Intelligence Studies at the University of Buckingham. From Istanbul, Turkey, Laura Patel, a foreign correspondent for the British newspaper The Independent. And from Washington, D.C., Park Nicholson, a senior research associate at the American Institute for Contemporary German Studies at Johns Hopkins University. Laura Patel, welcome to Global Journalist. You're in Turkey right now, which is the starting point for many of those journeying to Europe. Give us just a picture right now of what the refugee crisis looks like in Turkey.
Well, Turkey has taken more refugees than any other country in the world. It's got 2.5 million Syrians, roughly, and about 3 million refugees in total. And Turkey has found itself kind of right at the center of the debate over the migration crisis, if we want to call it that. Because European states are so worried about the numbers who came last year. You know, we know that more than a million people, as high as 1.4 million people, came into Europe last year, many, many, many of them through the route that was from Turkey over the Aegean Sea and onto Greek islands. And European leaders, led by German Chancellor Angela Merkel, are really desperate to avoid a repeat of this happening this year. And one of the ways they're trying to do that is by putting pressure on Turkey. So the EU struck this 3 billion euro deal with Turkey before Christmas. The idea was that Turkey would crack down on smugglers, the people who are helping people to make that journey across the sea, and also try and improve life for Syrians here to try and encourage them to stay. Because until now, Syrians haven't been able to work legally in Turkey, and that means that life is very difficult for them. People do often work, but because they're not in a legal framework, they can be quite easily exploited, paid less than the minimum wage. Often you get children working and not going to school. And, you know, a lot of families might have come here initially thinking that they would love to go back to Syria, hoping that the war would end. But obviously, you know, any of us, if we were in a country for a long period of time where we were looking back home, thinking it wasn't safe to go back and there wasn't really a future for our children, nowhere to send them to school, no way to provide for them, like, you start looking for other options. And that's what people here have been doing.
And Anthony Gleese, you heard Laura Patel talking about this deal that the EU struck with the Turkish government just before Christmas here. How do you assess the EU's overall response to, you know, what is admittedly a huge, huge wave, unprecedented wave of migration to the continent?
Well, you know, Joshua, to be perfectly honest with you, the EU's response has been pathetic. And it's caught up, of course, in the United Kingdom in the big debate as to whether we should continue to be members of the European Union, which I personally think we should do, or whether we should pull out together, because there are those who say the European Union is a kind of super state and it's managing, micromanaging every aspect of our lives. And then there are others, of whom I'm one, who say actually the European Union is increasingly powerless. And one reason that Britain should not leave it but lead it is because we need to give the European Union some backbone to deal with what is the biggest problem since the end of the Second World War. So the European Union has failed utterly so far. I have to say, very recently, we know that 700 million euros have been given to Greece to try to reassert the security of the borders there. And we've heard from Laura about the money given to Turkey. But basically, we need to understand there are two problems here, not one. There is the economic migrant problem and there is the asylum seeker problem. 50% of the 1.1 million people who came into the European Union in 2015, 50% are not asylum seekers. This is the European Union's own figures. 50% are economic migrants. Of course, we should offer safe haven to people fleeing for their lives. There's no question about that. And of course, we should offer economic opportunities to people who want to come to Europe to better their lives. However, the two groups are not the same, and we need to be very sure we know which person is in which group, and that can be very quickly decided. Furthermore, if I may just add this, those people seeking asylum should be looked after with the best possible facilities, the best hospitals, the best camps, the best schools, as near as possible to the places from which they are fleeing. These people do not have to come into Europe. Why not? Because the millions who will come into the European Union will certainly provoke a backlash. We're seeing that in Germany. We're seeing it in my own country.
Well, let me pass this to Park Nicholson then, because you do raise some interesting points, and you mentioned Germany, Park Nicholson, which has emerged as the singular sort of most influential government in the EU. On this issue, Prime Minister Angela Merkel, she took a really liberal policy towards accepting migrants during the past year. How has that decision played out for her in Germany?
Certainly, it's one of the issues that German government's been struggling with here. Just this past week in Washington, the foreign minister, Steinmeier, came and talked about Germany's continuing humanitarian duty to continue to accept refugees. And at least in the U.S., to a degree, she's been praised for her moral leadership on these issues. But certainly at home in Germany, the mood has soured over the past several months, and particularly since Cologne and the assaults that occurred there. And we have some important state elections coming up this month that are seen as tests for Merkel's refugee policy. And at the moment, her major competition is on the far right, which may get some seats and local representation in some of the state governments. But overall, in the coming year, and the major elections are in 2017 for Merkel, There's not necessarily going to be a major person who can unseat her, so to speak. So the expectation should be that Germany will continue kind of its open door policies and seek for a European solution as much as it can. There are some major dates coming up, and March 17th in Brussels in particular, when the leaders will discuss some of the major issues at play, including the temporary border checks that have been imposed in many of the countries some fear is a threat to the Schengen system and open trade.
Laura Pittel, let me turn this to you then, because you heard Anthony Glees raise a couple points here. One was the desire to keep migrants close to their countries of origin and to build, you know, essentially refugee camps for them near to the places where they are fleeing from, and also the feasibility of distinguishing between economic migrants and refugees seeking safety from war, if you will. Can you address how feasible are both of those proposals?
I definitely agree with Anthony that that's got to be part of the solution. When I was recently on the Greek island of Chios, like, everybody I met said they wanted to go to Germany, and like, that clearly isn't sustainable. Like, I think that encouraging people to stay put and imposing some kind of regulated system for taking quotas is like going to one of the only ways to impose a sense of control that will enable like Europe to deal with this problem. But in terms of what that means for Turkey on the ground, well, first of all, as Anthony said, only about half of the people coming through here are refugees, and I don't think Turkey is being asked to or can be expected to kind of host everybody who wants to head to Europe. And then on the sort of practical questions, I mean, the EU has offered 3 billion euros, although there's been quite a lot of tussling over that money because Italy raised some objections and it hasn't actually been paid yet. The solution, I think most experts say, is not to house everybody in camps. Actually, most Syrians don't live in camps in Turkey. They live in cities, and they often live in quite poor housing and don't have very good access to medical care and schooling. So massively expanding provision on those fronts and making sure that every child's in school and making sure that their parents are able to work is the only long-term solution as far as I can see. But it's a huge challenge for Turkey. I mean, Turkey itself is suffering from quite an uncertain economic period at the moment. Growth isn't as high as it has been. Unemployment is quite high. There's a lot of domestic political instability. There have been a series of bombings. There's a Kurdish conflict going on in the southeast. And so it's not an easy time for Turkey on its own, let alone worrying about 2.5 million visitors. And I think that so far Turkey feels that the EU's kind of interest in helping to settle Syrians here has been fairly token and self-interested. And I think that it, from Turkey's point of view, it wants to see a lot more help and commitment from Europe. I don't know if it's going to get it or not.
Anthony Glees, you raised this issue of a backlash in Europe against migrants and asylum seekers. We have seen far-right protesters sort of rampaging through towns in Germany, at least reports of that. In Finland, militia groups are patrolling for migrants in some areas. And in Italy, we understand one of the regional governments has tried to halt mosque construction. How potent do you see this anti-immigrant sentiment as a political force in the UK and across Europe now?
I think it's very potent. I think in the United Kingdom, it will be expressed chiefly as support for Britain exiting the European Union on the grounds that British people would feel borders should be kept safe. If Europe cannot keep its borders secure, then why should we trust Europe to do anything at all? But in other EU countries, particularly perhaps in Schengen countries, I think this will fuel a nasty neo-Nazi nationalistic backlash. And people, serious, sensible people, have no interest in giving ammunition to either group. And therefore, it makes it absolutely imperative that Britain in particular, who has a different policy from the Germans, and David Cameron, quite rightly in my view, has said, we will take refugees. He hasn't said we'll take a great deal, just 20,000 from Syria, but we will take them from refugee camps where they will already have been screened. That's the point. Frau Merkel's policy of open doors and windows has been catastrophic. It's been very bad for Germany. I mean, 60% of Germans themselves aren't satisfied with the policy, and it will doubtless cause big problems for her in the future as it is at the moment. But Germany is also trying to impose its open doors and windows policy on the other Schengen countries and in due course also on the United Kingdom. None of that is acceptable. Yes, we must be involved. The problem in Syria and Iraq is largely of our making. And by our, I mean the United Kingdom, as well as France, and of course the United States of America. We got them into this mess. We've got to help get them out of it. But we cannot bring in millions of people into the European Union, half of whom are not genuine asylum seekers, and not expect a nasty backlash that can destabilize our politics.
This is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, the refugee crisis in Europe and the debate over what to do with the thousands of people looking for safe haven. Joining us today from Buckingham, England, Anthony Glees. He's director at the Center for Security and Intelligence Studies at the University of Buckingham. From Istanbul, Laura Patel, a foreign correspondent for the Independent newspaper. And from Washington, D.C., Park Nicholson, a senior research associate for the American Institute for Contemporary German Studies at Johns Hopkins University. A reminder that if you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read our ongoing series of interviews with journalists in exile around the world and coverage of foreign affairs and press freedom issues. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Global Jurn. Park Nicholson, you heard Anthony Glees just raising the issue of the United States' role in trying to mitigate this crisis. Tell us just a little bit about that. How helpful has the United States been to Europe, if indeed it has been helpful at all?
Well, to a degree, I think in the U.S. kind of German dialogue and U.S.-European dialogue, certainly this has been a top issue. In Munich, just a month ago, Secretary John Kerry wanted to reassure Europe that it was trying to work with it on the refugee crisis. Now, in terms of accepting asylum seekers, of course, the issues are vastly different for Europe, which shares borders with these conflict regions, and the United States that doesn't. And there's been a lot of criticism here over the numbers of Syrian refugees that the United States has agreed to accept, you know, moving the limits of asylum seekers from 70,000 to 100,000 annually, and really only 10,000 or so Syrians are expected to be accepted under our current asylum laws. But really, the major issue is dealing with the conflict in Syria and the source of the problem and the source of the refugee crisis. And that has been a very contentious area of policy. And of course, it's going to emerge in the U.S. Presidential campaign as well as a subject of debate. Certainly, there's ongoing air campaigns against ISIS, and the terrorism situation is really the focus of much of U.S.-Syrian policy, but it is trying to work with Europe, and working with Germany in particular, on the agreements with Turkey, trying to manage the flows from the refugee camps and supply as much humanitarian aid as possible to those camps.
Laura Patel, let me ask you about what you see as the prospects for the future here, because Park Nicholson made it sound like this is something that potentially, you know, sort of all these difficulties between European governments, in essence, they could be solved if the stem of refugees can be staunched, if you will. How likely a prospect is that in the next year or two?
Well, I think Park is absolutely right that the solution lies in the conflicts themselves. You know, in recent weeks, we saw some very heavy fighting and air campaigns launched by Syrian and Russian jets in northern Syria. They were pushing a whole new wave of people out of their homes. In fact, actually, a senior figure in the NATO alliance just said very recently that he thought that Vladimir Putin was weaponizing the issue of refugees and the Syria conflict in order to strain the foundations of Europe. I don't know whether that was his primary aim or if he just sees it as a sort of helpful byproduct of his policy supporting Bashar al-Assad in Syria. But either way, that solving that conflict has clearly got to be at the root of that. And I think it's no coincidence that you've seen a big push recently for a ceasefire in Syria. It kind of came slightly out of the blue after the collapse of peace talks. And there was this bilateral agreement between John Kerry, the US Secretary of State, and Putin. That has gone better than many people expected. We're into sort of day five or six around the time that we're doing this show, and it's reduced the amount of fighting significantly, but not that many people are optimistic that it's going to hold, that it's going to last. I think that everybody has to prepare for the fact that the fighting could continue for some considerable time and that thousands more people could be made homeless. I think that just to follow on from one of Anthony's points about the importance of controlled taking of people from refugee camps, a bit like the UK Prime Minister David Cameron has said, there's real anger in places like Turkey and Greece that the EU has promised quotas to take people directly from these countries, and it hasn't delivered even on its quite measly promises. So towards the end of last year, European states agreed between them to take 160,000 people. But at the last count, they'd taken only 497. That's nothing. So really, if this idea of encouraging people to stay put is going to work, like, there has to be some hope both for the countries that are hosting them and the people themselves that there is a prospect that those who are the most vulnerable or most deserving could make it to Europe, and that Europe will share some of the burden. And at the moment, it just doesn't look like that's happening.
And Park Nicholson, our time does grow short, but it does seem like, at least in the United States, some views of this issue changed after the reports of mass sexual assaults on women in Cologne, Germany on New Year's Eve. How did that change the conversation in Germany and elsewhere in Europe?
Well, it certainly changed the conversation in Germany, and especially if you're looking at this as a continuum from the Paris attacks as well, in which two of the suspects had forged passports and moved along with the refugees. And certainly the combination of these issues over the winter period raised a lot of fears that have been present in Germany and in Europe in general for many decades, cultural differences, language differences, and in general feeling towards kind of integrating immigrants into what is hopefully a multi-ethnic society. And so the U.S. view of that is also a reflection of U.S. experience often. And the difficulty here we have in the election to have reasonable conversations about immigration. So I see this as a trend that is certainly testing leaderships on both sides of the ocean.
And Anthony Gleese, we do have just about 30 seconds left. Tell us, what do you see happening in the next year or two on this issue?
Well, I don't see much good happening. I said repeatedly that Germany under Frau Merkel has behaved like a hippie state, which is to say it's broken all the rules for emotional reasons, however moral they are, broken the rules, and it's very hard to put the rules together again. As far as Russia is concerned, the United States has let Russia move into the Middle East and Syria. And what Russia and Bashar al-Assad spell is more refugees, not less refugees. But if we can, in the European Union, if we can actually produce a sensible solution, we are an extremely rich, rich country, call us what you will, institution. We should be able to solve this problem, and that would be my hope.
That's going to do it for this edition of Global Journalist. My thanks to Matthew Castle, Anthony Gleese, Laura Patel, and Park Nicholson for joining us. Global Journalist executive producer is Josh Kranzberg. Our associate producers this week are Jinhong Chen, Alexandra Baneva, Chris Beyer, Alex DeRosier, and Inez Kagubare. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KBIA. Until next week, for all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure.